You're listening to The Sports Rabbi, hosted by Josh Halichman.
We're back here with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Halichman. Welcome aboard to the Sports Rabbi Show. We bring you the best of Israeli sports all the way up north to Nahariya, down south to Eilat, and all the great cities in between Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and many, many more. Today, we have a very special go and a very special guest coming to us all the way from Qatar, of course, Roy Jankelovich. He's going to join us talking about the World Cup, what it's like to be Jewish and Israeli in Qatar. That's going to be exciting. Great to have him on board right after that. Ben Pask is going to join the Sports Rabbi. We're going to wrap up the Maccabi Tel Aviv, Hapoel Jerusalem Israeli Classic, and the latest news in Israeli basketball as well. All the Holy Land hoops with Ben Pask. And of course, if you like this podcast, make sure you subscribe to us, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. Leave us a five-star rating. Make sure you write us a nice review. Get those shows delivered right to your mobile and wherever else you listen to your podcast. Check us out at The Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, sportsrabbi.com for the latest and greatest news, both in English and Hebrew. We deliver to you in both languages. And right now, we are bringing on live, it is none other than Roy Jankelovich coming to us from Qatar. How are you doing, Roy? What's going on?
I'm fine. How are you doing, Josh?
I'm doing great here in Jerusalem. You are not very far away. You know, it's not like much closer to the United States. I mean, you're only a couple of hour flight away, but you're literally in a country that is different. No question about that. Obviously, a lot of controversy surrounding hosting the World Cup, and we're going to go into a lot of different things. We'll talk about what it's like to be a journalist, Israeli, Jewish in Qatar right now. But Roy, how's it going? How are you enjoying the game so far?
I'm enjoying it nonstop. I've covered, in the meantime, after today, 15 games, and I've only been here for 10 days. But it seems as if I've been here for 3 months because we do so much. Going to two games a day, seeing the best players in the world, seeing the best teams in the world, and being at the biggest football event in the world. Nothing beats a World Cup.
You know, you've seen almost half of the games that have been played, I guess. I guess there'd be 32 games that would be played so far, and you've been to
I'll check my thing. Yeah, 32. Yeah,
32, and I am an accountant, so I guess I got that number right pretty fast. But you've been to about half of the games. Tell us a little bit, what has been the most exciting games for you so far? Was it today, the 3-3 draw that you were at? Was it some other game? Tell us, what was the excitement for you so far?
The 3-3, I don't think was the much quality. The game I really enjoyed is Morocco versus Belgium. The Moroccan fans were unbelievable. Yesterday, Morocco beat Belgium 2-0, and the Moroccan fans put on a show, and the stadium was really full. Today's game was good also, Serbia versus Cameroon, but I don't think the level was that good. Brazil tonight struggled against Switzerland. It's difficult in these early stages to find the game. Oh, but of course, yesterday, Spain-Germany, I think, was a really good game. Tactically well played by both teams, and of the recent games, that was a good one. So, and of course, the Saudi surprise, there have been so many things. Saudi Arabia surprising Argentina. It's countless, the amount of games. And the biggest disappointment for me was seeing England and the USA drawing 0-0.
Friday night special. That's what you got.
in a stadium, wait for this. In a stadium which is located 45 kilometers north of here, and it's always the schlepp, as we like to say, to get there, even for the media.
I assume it was full, though, because it was England, correct?
Yeah, it was full, but the football was really disappointing.
Talk a little bit, Roy, about the stadiums, the atmosphere. Have the stadiums, have they been full? Have they not been full? There's been reports that Qatar was papering the house. We saw people leaving early from the opening game. But I assume that most of the stadiums have been full. I'm sure there have been some stadiums where there are empty seats. But what have you seen on the ground there?
I have seen empty parts of the stadiums. It would especially note the games which Qatar played, where the fans of Qatar started leaving at halftime. But on paper, they were full, but they were not really ever full because FIFA put out numbers which are not what we're used to. They count all tickets sold and not all people who are in the stadium, which is something which we would never do. Mm-hmm. So it's all about the math. That's a big issue.
Uh-huh.
So I have to say that the games with the Arab, Asian, or meaning Morocco, Tunisia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Qatar also, all these games are full, meaning almost sold out, but not sold out because you still have some empty seats. You have the games today like Serbia, Cameroon was an example of a game which wasn't full. But the Serbian fans who came, they put on a show. For Cameroonians, it's difficult to come here. It's expensive. They have no direct flights, I think. So I can totally understand why they did not come.
Interesting. So that's on the ground, people in the stadium, people not in the stadium. Roy, of course, Roy Jankulovic, he's there, Israel Sport, covering the World Cup. He's there for the whole tournament in Qatar. Now, Roy, tell me a little bit about the kosher food situation. There's been so many different reports. And, there's been reports that the Qatar government has not allowed kosher food. There have been reports they're only serving bagels. Then I've seen they're serving bagels and hot dogs. They're saying that they're having minions. They're allowing people to pray in groups. And then they're not allowed to pray. What is the story on the ground there?
Okay, so they do have bagels. Bagels are done by Rabbi Mendy, whose father is the Rav Rashi of the Arab country. He usually sits in Istanbul. Istan is here. He works on it the whole month. You can go fetch bagels at his place. You'll be able to tell the listeners and viewers where they can fetch them if they're here in Qatar. Uh-huh. And everything is free of charge. Because it's a tzedukah, it's a truma, a donation. Mm-hmm. Now, in addition, there's another guy, Rabbi Shloimo, I think is his name, from Guadalajara, Mexico, who decided to help all the Jewish media here and as well visitors here by providing them with kosher meat. So he was supposed to have a cook to come with him, but this cook couldn't come. So he hired two women over here. He had the kosher kitchen because he's a rabbi. Everything is a donation also. And you're able to pick up kosher meals by his place. Also Shabbat meals and everything. With regard to the prayers, they do have prayers, but it's all done in... that's done a bit in hiding. And you get the location maybe an hour before when it's Havdullah, let's say. And about Friday night, a guy from Guadalajara was not yet here last Friday. So maybe this Friday we will know more about that.
Now, you talked about Jewish media. So obviously the Israeli contingent. First of all, how many people are in the Israeli contingent of media? And what other Jewish media are there at the World Cup in Qatar, Roy?
Well, it seems like from South America, there are many Jews who I don't even know them. So they're hanging around together. South America and CONCACAF and the USA, maybe. I haven't met them, but I've heard that Mexicans, Argentinians, could be some Americans, but I don't know them. We, the Israeli contingent, are not that big. We're not including the TV, of course. We have to mention that the TV is divided. The TV doesn't hang around with us. They're as well far away from us relatively. They're in a place called Pearl, which is not exactly city center. I'm lucky to be in the center of the city. And the, most of the people in the group don't exactly keep kosher or Shabbat, but it's an interesting story for all the media to cover. the Israeli and Jewish media and the global media over here, but it seems that that doesn't exactly interest them.
Mm-hmm. Now, Roei, we've heard all the stories about the Israeli media being harassed by the locals and by other Arab country fans, if it's Saudis or whatever else. We've seen all the articles, be it in the Jerusalem Post and any other places, in the Hebrew. Now, I believe that a lot of it is, looking for ratings, as they say, that they wanted to make sure that, yes, we're Israeli. They knew who they were asking questions to, and that they wanted to get it for ratings because it's good for ratings to see people, hate on the Jews or hate on the Israelis. And in reality, somebody like yourself probably has not faced one iota of any issues. Now, please tell us on the ground what is going on in that aspect.
Well, on the ground, most of what you said is correct. Well, I would not go and take my mic in open areas and ask people questions, and then they see the Hebrew without knowing who the person is. Meaning you have many Arabs here. There's nothing wrong with that. But you should not be asking people questions when you expect them to get such answers. And as you said, it's all about the ratings. People want to clicks on the sites, more viewers on TV, and all these stories. And you have as well Guy Hoffman, the guy who came here to do nonsense. So he's such a stand-up star, and he caused most of the noise. And so did, of course, my colleague Ras Shefnik from I look at it with a smile, but the problem is that people like Malal, what you call that in English? Anyway, they put out a warning for Israelis not to come to Qatar, and that I think is something really wrong, because if Israelis are here without the flag, without anything hanging around, there's no need to be afraid here. Brussels is more dangerous now than Qatar. Mm-hmm. Did they put out a travel warning for Brussels? They did not. So that's something which I find really ridiculous, because nobody has been attacked. They've been flagging, they've been holding flags behind reporters like Tal Shorer from Channel 13, who's no more here. And if you listen to people like Oad Chemo from Channel 12, he tells the reality also. What can you do? You're in an Arab country. The people over here, they do not know much about Israel. And the people who are coming to visit also don't know much. All they see is what they see on Al Jazeera. And what you see on Al Jazeera is not friendly stuff. So that's all. And that's why it's better not to bring a flag. And okay, so you see the Palestine flags here and there. You see them in every city. So fine. It's only a flag. There's no need to be so intimidated by all of this.
Have you seen any Israeli flags in the stadiums
at
all?
Not one.
Which is interesting, because we've seen in past World Cups, of course, Israeli flags all over the place, if it's Brazil here or there. And I also haven't seen anything on TV. So I was wondering if you'd seen anything. So I guess people, other than the media, it seems that the citizens are heeding the government's call of keeping a low profile.
Exactly. And I must add that 10,000 of the Israelis over here are Israeli Arabs. That's something the mainstream media does not report about, as if they're not citizens of Israel. So that's another thing. And they're enjoying every minute of the World Cup.
Oh, I'm sure they are. How many Jewish Israelis do you believe are there?
I assume that between 4,000 and 5,000, which is a lot.
That is a lot. That's a big number.
Yeah.
Now, but I have to ask you, a lot of our colleagues, have been in Brazil. Excuse me, have been in Brazil, have been in all different places. They're now in Qatar. Some have been there already. Some are there as working media. Some is there just as fans. How disappointed were some of them when they saw that Saudi Arabia-Argentina game?
Oh, I'm sure they were, but I was thinking, I was telling you in our messaging, I was thinking that it can happen. So
it was a historical game, but
yeah, it was. But everybody comes to see Messi. They also come to see Neymar. Neymar is at the moment injured. I have happened to us today. Gabriel Jesus, what will be with Neymar? When will he come back? He said it's up to the doctors. So that means it's not even sure that he will be back in the knockout stage. So here, another thing I have to say. Brazil, it's the most amazing team to cover. The amount of media following Brazil is second to none. The length of time we wait for the mix zone, for example. The mix zone is where you speak to players after a match. Over here was almost 2 hours until the last players came out, which was longer than any other match I have been to. But it's fun because you get to talk to every player if he wants to talk to you. So and in any language, player talks. As we know, we have Brazilians playing everywhere, in France, in England, in Germany. So they all speak the languages of the league they play in.
Interesting. You know, Roy, you talked about the media, like being so many there for Brazil. What are the other countries that have a lot of media? And what are the countries that don't have very many media members at all?
Okay.
And where do you, and just before I want to preface it also, what have you seen of the US and Canada? I'd be curious to know how many, you know, what the media contingent is like for them also.
Okay. The US and Canada contingent is not that big. Not big means between 50 and 150 people. The countries with the biggest media contingent are Brazil, Argentina, Germany, England, Spain, I heard, had a very big, I saw also a very big amount of.
And how many people are you talking about? How many people are we talking about here from England? 500 almost, media members?
Almost 100, more than 100 from a country, which is a lot.
Okay.
And for example, Greece, they had one guy and now he's gone. They only have the TV. By chance, the guy from Greece is a friend of mine from other tournaments, so I got to talk to him. But he may come back. So that's an example of a country which doesn't have many media people here. But India also has quite a large amount of media here without the team being here. But that's because there are 80,000 Indian fans over here, and there's a very big Indian community in Qatar, in Doha especially. So that's an interesting aspect. Israel, we have in written press something like we are 10, which is quite a large amount for a country which has not qualified for the World Cup. But it's always like that because Israelis like the big events. Serbia also have a big media contingent, Poland also, but these are countries which qualified, and so it's relatively weak. Turkey doesn't have a big one.
How about the African countries that are playing? Like Cameroon,
Senegal and Cameroon I've seen. Ghana I've not yet seen, but Senegal and Cameroon have a large, not big. Around about 40 to 50, which is a lot.
That's a lot of media. Yeah. You know, that's no question. That's a lot of media people. Go ahead.
Just add one thing. Because of the fact that we're so many media members in one small space, it's very difficult for people sometimes to get for media to be accepted into games. So it happens often that you get rejected for a game here or that, but you still have a way of getting to these games. But that's something which did not happen in any other World Cup. Continue.
How many seats are there in the media section in most of these stadiums?
Oh, wow. That depends on the stadiums. So the biggest stadium in Lusail, 80,000 fans, and the media section consists of, I think, more than 1,000 places.
Wow.
So it's huge. And they also take over some sides of the stands, meaning that the tickets which were not sold are allocated into media. So it can reach more than 1,000 people.
Wow, unbelievable.
And in the smaller stadiums, it's about 300 to 400, which is also a lot. The small stadiums are, let's say, Khalifa, Education City, 974, Tumama. Those are the stadiums in town. There's another stadium called Al Bayt, which is in the north, which is the second largest, which also can hold about 1,500. No, less than that, around 800 media members, which can go up to 1,200.
And you mentioned before the mix zones, where the players come through. Have you... Have most teams' players spoken, like the U.S. players, Canadian players, England players? Are there countries that speak more? Are there countries that speak less?
It depends if they win or lose. For example, yesterday, Axel Witsel and Kevin De Bruyne, they walked by the Belgian media, the entire media, and didn't talk. But that's because they lost. That's an example now I remember because I was there and I saw it. So it all depends on the result. Uh-huh. And sometimes the press officer tells you if you talk, you don't talk. Sometimes the players don't want to. If not, they just throw a word here or there. But I've not seen one player with the earpiece on him like they do in other sports we follow in Israel. Not one had a big earpiece on him. So.
Roey, before we let you go, what can we look forward to over the next week or so? And maybe we'll have you on next week again to give us a short update. So what's coming up now? The third round of the group stages. What are the big games that people are going to be looking at?
The biggest game is Iran versus the USA. Mm-hmm. The winner goes up. That's a huge game. It's going to be played on Tuesday, which is 2 days from now. At Al Tumama Stadium. Also, Ecuador-Senegal is a very interesting game. It will be played in Khalifa Stadium, and also there, the winner is going to qualify. We have Costa Rica versus Germany, which on paper seems that Germany will win it, but if Germany don't win it, it's going to complicate their situations. And of course, the Argentina group. That's the most exciting group in the World Cup, where each team has a chance to qualify. But Argentina must beat Poland in order to reach the next stage. So that's something all Argentine fans at home and abroad are praying for. And Saudi Arabia versus Mexico, where the winner in that game, if there's a winner, will qualify also. So that's of those groups. Belgium are almost knocked out, but they still have a chance. They're playing Croatia. Canada, I think, unfortunately, are knocked out for all the Canadians.
Yes, they are done. So, unbelievable. Roey Jankulovic, an honor and pleasure to have you on board. Where could people follow your reports from Qatar?
Okay, they can follow me on Israel Sport website, www.isport.co.il, on my Twitter handle, at Roey J, R-O-I-J-A-Y, on Instagram, my name, Roey Jankulovic, on Facebook also, Roey Jankulovic.
There you have it, Roey Jankulovic. An honor and a pleasure to have you on board. Thanks for joining the Sports Rabbi today. This is a great update, and I appreciate it very much. Enjoy your time there, and you know, I would say LL Israel, except it's not going to be this year that we're seeing Israel in the World Cup. But who knows? Maybe in the next one, they will make it. Roey Jankulovic, honor and pleasure to have you on board. We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you for having
me. You're listening to the Sports Rabbi.
All right, we're back with the Sports Rabbi, Josh Halligman. I hope you enjoyed Roey Jankulovic live from Qatar, giving us the lowdown on what is really going on with the Israeli media, what is really going on with the kosher food, what is really going on all around Doha and more. Roey was just great. So I recommend if anybody has friends that want to know exactly what's going on in Qatar at the World Cup, you got to listen to that segment with Roey Jankulovic. Right now we move over to Holy Land Hoops. Let's talk about Israeli basketball, Israeli Classico. Maccabi Tel Aviv, Hapoel Jerusalem, and the Reds come out on top 80-75. We bring on none other than season ticket holder himself for Maccabi Tel Aviv, a desperate fan of Maccabi Tel Aviv, but also a good man and a very good reporter here. Ben Pask, how are you doing today?
G'day, Josh. So, doing okay considering the last couple of games, but we're going to get through it, and there are other people suffering a lot more than I am.
Yeah, the head coach is suffering a lot more than you are right now. So is Darren Hilliard, probably. So, you know, listen, we look at Maccabi Tel Aviv, Hapoel Jerusalem. Hapoel Jerusalem had a week and change, you know, or so to get ready for this game. They came in, they played exactly how Alexander Djikic wanted to play, dictated the pace of play right from the get-go. He played ugly ball, which is how Jerusalem's played all season long. So it was no surprise. The style of the game should have been no surprise. The minute Vene was going to SimCenter, Vene was registered, you knew they were going to try to spread the floor, and he was going to be an important piece to outside shooting. And he came in, and listen, he hasn't played in a month. And the guy hit 3 three-pointers at 11 points. Add on to that, Kadeem Carrington with 16 second-half points for a total of 20. Speedy Smith flirted with a triple-double for the second week in a row, and he was just masterful. And you look at a Maccabi Tel Aviv team that just looked like disinterested in being there. A fan base that also, you know, seemed tired. A coach with no answers in Oded Katash. And you had the perfect storm for Hapoel Jerusalem to pick up the victory.
It was unbelievable. I mean, you talk about the fan base and being at the game, I always look forward to Maccabi games, the atmosphere there, but the Hapoel fans in their corner with, you know, not so, so many flares, not as lively as Hapoel Tel Aviv fans, to put it politely. They were just unbelievable. They were, you know, you talk about the Maccabi fans being the sixth man in the Maccabi games at Yad Eliyahu. Last night it really was Hapoel Yerushalayim's fans were the sixth man. They were loud. It felt like a Hapoel home game at times.
Yeah, it definitely did. Now, after the game, you know, during the game, after the game, whatever you want to call it, I mean, Maccabi Tel Aviv looked totally discombobulated throughout. They were just disastrous. You know, they were chasing after the game the whole way through. Anytime they cut it to 4 or 5 points, Jerusalem was there with a big shot to bump it right back up. It never seemed that Maccabi was going to win this game. Oded Katash talks about how players were tired and there was no energy. Now, I wrote a whole piece about the game, which you can check out. It talks about taking opportunities. And as Vene took an opportunity and played well, after, you know, almost being shown the door out. Same thing with Speedy Smith, by the way, who, you know, three straight incredible games. Maccabi Tel Aviv had the chance to do the same. Yiftach Ziv had the chance to do the same. Darren Hilliard had the chance to do the same. I know that you've been supporting Jake Cohen, so we won't go into Jake Cohen, you know, as much as I'll go into the other players. But Rafi Menko played 28 minutes. He was not great. You know, I mean,
how many shots at three did he take?
How many shots of three did he take?
In 28 minutes, he took one shot. And look,
right? I mean,
I know he's not the same player as last year, but he's there for, you know, his outside shots like that. And he just didn't find the space. Yeah. I don't know if I'd say he was disinterested.
I don't know. They think there was no game plan. I think, at the end of the day, Jalen Adams had 11 points on this game in 26 minutes, but let's call it what it really is, right? Jalen Adams played like garbage for the whole game, okay? Mm-hmm. He scored those near the end, and he was collecting points. He was not very good. And he barely played in the last EuroLeague game. Gerald Martin was very good, probably the best player on the court. John DiBartolomeo was a shell of himself, 2 points in 22 minutes. Darren Hilliard, 12 minutes, 1 point. Josh Nebo was a disaster. I mean, the guy can't rebound, and he scored 2 points. 2 points, two rebounds in 15 minutes. Yiftach Ziv was nowhere to be found. Now, you know, on one hand, you look at the players, they didn't take the opportunity. On the other hand, I don't know how much the coach put together a game plan in this game. I don't see a game plan. I didn't see any cohesiveness. It looked like these players had never seen each other before in their lives that were on the court. There were no set plays. There was no, they just went out there to play the game. And it can't be that you go out and play the game. It can't be that you just go out there and play. You know, you're playing an important Clasico against a good team that's well coached, okay? Jokić is an excellent coach. People can complain about his style of basketball, but Simone Pagenaud had ugly style also, and he won the league championship. So at the end of the day, you know, it's a matter of putting up wins and losses, and, you know, they're collecting the W's. Maccabi Tel Aviv, the players didn't take the opportunity. The coach did not prepare them and prepare this team properly for this game. He talked about how their tongues were hanging out, how they were wiped out, and how they had no energy the day before. Well, you know what? That's the coach's job to make sure they have energy. And today, you saw on all the Israeli websites, One, Sport5, Ynet, all the cat calls coming down on Oded Katash, that management is not happy with the way, you know, this game was this. And in Denver, right, they shouldn't be happy with the way it was. They're the management. They went 2-3 in the last five. I said that Maccabi Tel Aviv was going to go 4-1, which I don't know exactly what I was drinking at the time I said that. But, you know, if they would have gone 3-2, okay, you know, we'll take it. But 2-3, my goodness. I mean, you know, yo, Joe, you got to win a few games, right? I mean, okay, you won the Derby. That's great. You beat Olympiacos at home, which is a good, solid win, right? But you lost in Serbia twice. Also, in the 69-68 game, which we've spoken about, the coach deserves full credit for taking that loss and you know, not drawing up a proper play, having Wade Baldwin take the ball up, who already had five turnovers. And you saw yesterday also Wade Baldwin, just like, you know, turnover city again. And he had six turnovers. I mean, the guy is a turnover machine. And that's fine. You know, they said Brown had a little bit of an injury, so he didn't dress. They didn't want to risk him. And on and on and on and on. But I'll tell you something, boy. Yesterday's game was just you know, they kept saying afterwards it's a long season and this and that. But my goodness, I mean, that was a disaster. If you look at Maccabi Tel Aviv and how they played that game yesterday, that was just bad news, Ben Pass.
It was. You talk about Wade Baldwin. He every game he looks frustrated. Some games there are difficult and debatable calls made on him. But yesterday, there were times where he would look at the referee, why didn't I get the foul there? Why didn't I get the foul there? And then he'd take it out and make a foul himself. And Katash has said it as well. He's relatively young, not so young, but he's maturing. And I think to his credit, he does show it at times. But yesterday, he just looks so emotional, and I wouldn't say not interested, but it's the sort of energy that is too negative. And I saw it from Jalen Adams as well. I mean, there was, you know, obviously he probably would have felt, I don't know if pressure is the right word, but coming up against his old team would have had some sort of meaning. And he also looked frustrated at times.
Yeah,
and
he looked clueless. Frustrated. He looked clueless. But again, where do you know, I had a discussion with one of the reporters after the game in the press conference room. You know, where you know, we talked about Hilliard, talking about all these types of players. Where does the responsibility lie? I mean, it lies in both parties, right? The player has to show up and play well. And you have to have the coach also putting in a game plan. It was clear there was no proper game plan for this. There was just none. There was nothing going on. I mean, and you know what? I understand it was the fifth game in 9 days and all that, right? I get all that. I hear all that. But let's be honest. I mean, this is Maccabi Tel Aviv. You have players that haven't dressed. Okay, they didn't dress in the Belgrade game. Even if they dressed in the Olympiacos or didn't dress there, they barely played also. I mean, you're looking at players here that should be fresh. Jalen Adams barely played last week. He should be fresh. Rafi Menko didn't play this week. He should have been fresh. Guy Panini, you know, I would have liked to see more of Guy Panini because he was good in his 9 minutes. Darren Hilliard barely played. He should have been fresh. Jake Cohen should have been fresh. You could be playing Jake Cohen 30 minutes. Why are you only playing him 11 minutes? Josh Nebo, you know, again, I'm not going to go into him, but Yiftach Zeev, I mean, he hasn't played. These guys should be fresh. These guys, did they not understand where they had to go to be ready for this game? I mean, I don't understand it. Now they have a week to prepare for Bayern Munich. They never win in Munich. Now, we're going to see another coaching masterpiece by Andrea Trinchieri that's going to take him to school. You know, they're going to take him to school.
The game against Bayern, 16th place Bayern Munich on Friday night. They're sitting at 3 wins and 7 losses, but you look at the last 5 games, 3 wins for Bayern, only 1 for Maccabi. And you're going in where Maccabi let a lot of points in, but they also score a lot of points, and just got a feeling that we might get the same thing that we got against Red Star, that, you know, if they can stop the offense from Maccabi and Maccabi can't, you know, score their 75, 80 points, then it's going to be a disaster.
Oh, boy. Listen, Maccabi Tel Aviv is in, listen, they are in trouble. Oded Gattash is in trouble. Can he turn it around? I mean, once you start hearing these things coming out in the media that we saw today, you know that I don't want to say the end is near, but there's definitely a direction that management is going when those things come out to the media. Is Oded Gattash going to make it to Hanukkah? I got to tell you, back in 2013-14 with David Blatt, the same thing was going on, except David Blatt is a very different coach and was a very different coach than Oded Gattash is. He was also a decorated coach at that time. Oded Gattash does not have the CV that David Blatt had. So, I mean, is he making it to Hanukkah, Ben Pass? I'm the biggest Oded supporter out there, okay? I was banging the drums that he should be the coach and all that stuff, right? You know me. I liked him. I think he's a good coach. He's a player's coach, all that. I'm the last person to say I want to see him out of there. I don't want to see anybody out of there. But is this job just too big for him? Is he just not cut out to be a EuroLeague coach? Maybe he's not. I don't know. Does he make it to Hanukkah? Yes or no?
I'm the same as you. I want to say yes, but the way that people are talking now, looking at the schedule as well, it wouldn't surprise me if he's not going to make it through to Hanukkah, which is, you know what, 3 weeks away.
Yeah, I don't know. I got to tell you, I don't know. All right, we're on here with Ben Pask, Josh Halfman, sports rabbi, talking about the Israeli basketball. Let's move on to some of the other games we'll briefly go through. Hapoel Tel Aviv, 108-80 winners over Galil Elyon. Galil Elyon is a bad team right now. There are some budget problems. There are some issues over there. This team is not very good. They have a couple of very good players, but they're not putting it together. Abdul Malik Abu is a disaster recently. Deshaun Booker's all right. Jalen Hudson's okay. Bryce Washington's good, but they've got to make some changes. Jalen Hudson has an out clause and can leave the team. That would be a death knell if that happens to them. On the other hand, Hapoel Tel Aviv, they make the big move, bringing in Chinonu Onuwaku. He makes his debut, 16 points in 20 minutes, 7 rebounds, looked great in that time. The big winner of him coming in is Edun Zalmanson with 20 minutes. I feel bad about Chris Horton. I'm going to have a little piece about that coming out tomorrow. Chris Horton, of course, is not going to be with the team anymore until he finds a new team. I feel bad for the guy because he didn't do anything wrong. He actually played above and beyond what they expected for him at Hapoel Tel Aviv. But when you have a chance to bring in a superstar, you're going to bring the superstar into the team, Ben Bass.
100%. And, you know, he's not going to be with the team. He's not going to be training or anything until he finds a new team, and then they'll let him out. It's unfortunate for him, especially being a foreign player in Israel. Can't be easy for him. But, again, that's basketball. It's a business, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wrote in this piece, is that basketball is a business. As rough as it is, it's not pleasant, but that's what it is. Nesiona, 91-84 winners over Bnei Herzliya. Herzliya also struggling mightily. There was rumors Oren Aharoni was going to be out of a job. He was going to leave, and he's in Tenerife now. They have problems all over the place at Herzliya. Sandy Cohen, 16 points. Morris Kemp, 17. Chris Babb, 21. Julian Gamble, 11. Andy Van Vliet has not been great this season. He's been a problem. They're missing a player. They desperately need. They've already gone through 9 foreigners, and they have one more slot left for the whole season. They're in trouble. Nesiona, on the other hand, Alan Hussein's done a great job despite Leo Carrera being injured. He's been able to really move this team along very nicely. Shaq Buchanan, breakout game with 30 points. Tyler Bate, 27. Big points by Golan Goot with 9 near the end of the game. And, of course, DJ Cooper with 19 assists over there. Thoughts on those two teams?
Unfortunately, didn't get to watch the game, but I like the way that I've seen throughout the season since he's been here, Shafi Cannon playing. And I think that, you know, it's not the strongest league in Europe, but you still have a lot of teams that aren't up the top, that still have players that put on good performances, and that's what we like to see.
And Nessiono is going to be heading to the North European or European North League. They have a couple games this week in Poland. Good luck to them over there. Beersheba 79-70 winners over Hapoel Eilat. Good game for Southern Reds. They've held their opponents now to under, you know, around 70 points two games in a row after giving up well over 90. That's good news for Beersheba. The big change there is Greg Whittington coming in, 12 points, 8 rebounds. But it's not just that. He is an absolute beast in the paint on both ends of the floor. Defensively, he is so good, and he's such a presence and a body and understanding, high basketball IQ, knows how to score when he has to. And that's made all the difference. It is really amazing. Plus, Joachim Schuchman had 13 first quarter points. That's also going to help when you beat a team like Eilat, who Emmanuel Kompa, 21 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists. Very nice. Noam Avivia, 9 points, 9 rebounds. Tunnel Artsy, 10 points. DJ Funderburk, 11, but not enough from Hapoel Eilat. They still need to make some changes over there, Ben Pask.
Yeah, they're sitting down the bottom of the table. Very, very bad, you know, plus minus as well. Things aren't looking good for them. But like you said before, it's a long season, but things need to change.
Finally, we just had a barn burner of a matchup, just ended. Kiritata escapes with an 81-76 win. It was a crazy game. They're winning Kiritata 27-9 after the first quarter. Okay? They gave up 9 points. And Javonte Redick's going off. I mean, Stevens going off. Karam Ashur going off. Siobhan Lewis going off. And then it's almost even in the second quarter. But it's still like a major, you know, it doesn't look like it's going to be anywhere as close or anything like that. Gilboa puts up another quarter where they win 17-16. Then they come back feverishly in the fourth quarter, outscoring here out to 29-20, but they had drilled it down to only 2 points with a few seconds remaining in the game. And it got really, really close. I mean, it was 79-76 with 15 seconds left. And anything could happen in that case, right? But they were able to escape with the win, Kiritata. And again, that's a huge win for Kiritata. The fact that they were able to now have won their third game. There are teams with only 2 wins. And if you have 3 wins already, you're in good shape. And you didn't have Michael Brisker playing his best game with only 3 points in 16 minutes. So on that side, that's a very, very good win for Kiritata.
Great win. And they, you know, managed to hold on. I think we've seen with a lot of, you know, very good teams when they have a large lead and then they let it go, they just lose the plot, for want of a better term. But looks like they've managed to hold on, and that's the sort of thing that can really lift the team going forward as well.
All right, we have coming up this week in European basketball, Hapoel Tel Aviv Budućnost home game on Tuesday night. Tenerife hosts Bnei Herzliya also Tuesday. Wednesday night, Hapoel Haifa Antwerp in Haifa. Hapoel Jerusalem hosts Back in Bears. And then, of course, on Friday, Bayern Munich, Maccabi Tel Aviv. But earlier in the day, a matinee, Hapoel Holon hosts Hapoel Tel Aviv. Ben Pack.
What time is that game on?
I think it's at 1:30. All right. They changed the time about 5 times here. I'm still trying to figure out if the sports rabbi is going to make it or not to that game. I'm checking out the minutes here to see if I'm going to be able to make it because of Shabbat. So we'll see. So we have a bunch of exciting games coming up this weekend. Ben Pask, I know you wrote a piece today about an interesting young Jewish athlete who went third in the Australian Football League's draft to have a Jewish
AFL.
He went third in the draft. I understand that it's very rare for a Jewish player to be even playing the sport. And then to have him being drafted so high up is also tremendous. You have an article up on the Sports Rabbi website right now in English. Talk a little bit about who this player is and a little bit about the sport, because I would think a lot of the Americans, Canadians, Israelis don't have a clue what the AFL is. So please go ahead.
Growing up as a kid in America, I imagine lots of people play, I don't know, peewee football or basketball. for us in Melbourne, Australia, the big thing for us is playing Aussie rules football. It's the sort of thing that you want to go, you know, watch your team play every weekend. It's a winter sport. It's a tough contact sport, 18 on 18, lots of tackling. It's a, when people ask, what is it similar to? I say it's like basketball, American football, soccer, everything wrapped up into one. It's a strange sport if you haven't grown up with it, but they're very athletic. They jump high. They don't wear any protection, and it's a very tough game. So what they had today was the national draft. We have all the kids from around the country trying, you know, they want to get picked up and drafted. It's very similar to more the NFL rather than the NBA. The bottom team gets the first pick and then reverse order from the ladder going up. What we had, it was thought that this Jewish kid, Harry Sheezer, would go in the top five. And he ended up going number three. And as you'll see in the article, the last Jewish, halakhically Jewish person to get drafted into the AFL was a guy by the name of Julian Kersner back in 1993. So what's that, nearly 30 years ago? And even him, he was drafted in the 30s, only played, I think, four games in his career. There are a couple of others, Todd Goldstein, who is his father's Jewish. He currently plays. He's played close to 300 games, which is a, you know, one of those huge milestones. And now he's joined at the North Melbourne Kangaroos by Harry Sheezel. He's a forward, very athletic kid who went to my alma mater, Mount Scopus College in Melbourne. He also played for Ajax, which is not the football team, soccer team in the Netherlands. It's a Jewish club in Melbourne. Played with them growing up, and then when he got to more of a representative age, played with the Sandy Dragons and Vic Metro. And he's, you know, good on him, because like you said, there aren't a lot of Jewish kids who make it to the top of the AFL. And obviously he's just been drafted. He's got a long way to go, but it's fantastic looking online. You've got a lot of people in the community supporting him. Lots of posts from a bunch of different people. And all the papers in Australia covering it. Unfortunately, with that also comes anti-Semitism, where there are Jews or anti-Semites. And he's had a bit of that to deal with the last few days in the media as well. But choosing to look at the positives, he's been picked up, and good luck to him. I think we'll, you know, all the Jewish community in Australia, no matter who they barrack for, which team they root for, they're cheering him on, hoping he does well. And who knows, maybe some additional fans from overseas now.
So you're excited because this is your alma mater. You're excited because this is a young Jewish boy. Is he living your dream, Ben Pask?
Yeah, the 9 or 10-year-old me would have dreamed of making it to the AFL level. And good on him. It's a, well, you know, like we said before, sport's a business. And really, really hope that he manages to be successful and, you know, in this and whatever other endeavors he chooses to take on. But right now, people are just very happy for him in the community.
Pretty good. Ben Pask, any final thoughts, and where can people reach out to you?
Final thoughts. Happy to have other things to distract me from the basketball after the last few days. And then if you want to check out any articles I've written, you can reach out to me on Twitter at BPASK85.
Of course, me at The Sports Rabbi, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, sportsrabbi.com for the latest and greatest news in Israeli sports. We'll bring it to them both. And make sure you download the app. Don't forget the app. Download the app, App Store for your Apple iPhone, Google Play for your Android. Check it out. Get it. I know Ben Pask sleeps with his phone. Doesn't want to miss any of Moshe's player grades, player marks. I know that the head of the league yesterday was praising Moshe's player marks, and was waiting desperately and eagerly to see what Speedy Smith and Kadeem Carrington and Eve Tuxi were all going to get. So that's good stuff. Make sure you download the app. Ben Pask, honor and pleasure to have you on board. We'll speak to you very soon. Thanks for coming on board today.